From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. Petersburg is among the top hotspots for COVID-19 cases in the country, according to the New York Times. An online interactive map published by the newspaper shows the Petersburg borough with the fourth highest daily average of new COVID cases per capita for counties in the nation in the past week. In that time, Petersburg trails only three counties in Colorado, Kentucky, and Oklahoma for average daily COVID cases per 100,000 people. The Southeast Island community of around 3,200 people hit its highest active COVID-19 case count since the start of the pandemic on both Tuesday and Wednesday, March 2nd and 3rd. Petersburg's Emergency Operations Center reported active cases at 67 on Wednesday. That number reflects two new cases reported that day. In addition, there were two more cases reported for the day before, driving the active case count for both days to 67. Two more people were listed as recovered Wednesday as well. In other news, the National Transportation Safety Board has opened an investigation into the disappearance of the helicopter piloted by former tribal health executive Andy Tuber. Tuber's helicopter disappeared Tuesday between Anchorage and Kodiak. The same day, the Anchorage Daily News revealed that Tuber had resigned his job as president of the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium just after being accused of sexual abuse and coercion by a former assistant. Tuber denied the allegations and comments to the newspaper. The Coast Guard called off its search for Tuber on Wednesday after 13 hours, saying that decision was based on factors like temperature and survivability of the crash. Searchers spotted a yellow float that could have come from Tuber's helicopter, but they weren't able to recover it. NTSB officials say they're working with a meteorologist to gather information about weather in Tuber's last known location near the Barren Islands. A buoy showed winds gusting around 20 miles an hour at the time Tuber went missing, and the area is known for being tricky to fly through, says retired Kodiak helicopter pilot Tom Walters.
It causes its own weather and stuff like that, especially this time of the year when if you're flying in icing conditions, ice can cover your aircraft up pretty fast and add the weight and some serious conditions on the aircraft.
Meanwhile, the Tribal Health Consortium says an independent counsel is investigating the allegations against Tuber. And Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and the luxury retailer Neiman Marcus have settled a lawsuit over a coat the company sold. The coat bears a striking resemblance to a copyrighted Alaska Native raven's tail pattern. The case began with Neiman Marcus, but eventually grew to include 11 defendants. In a statement, Sea Alaska Heritage says they've agreed to work together to resolve the, quote, the issue, quote, under Tlingit law and cultural protocols. Jacob Adams is the cultural nonprofit's attorney on the case. He says the terms of the settlement are confidential, but some effects of it may become public.
There are conditions that are being met to meet the Tlingit law aspect and cultural requirement aspect. So in the future, some things may be seen as a result of the settlement.
In a filing on Monday, lawyers from both sides asked the U.S. District Court to hold off on dismissing the case until at least October 1st. They need time to fulfill the conditions of the settlement. Adams says this case is an indicator of shifting attitudes around indigenous groups objecting to the commercialization of their culture.
Most of the time, it would just end with someone saying, oops, right? Sorry. Or we didn't know. Or we did know, but we were really trying to celebrate you. We were giving you exposure. Look how beneficial our actions were to you. It was at a good place that we've done this, right?
Now, he says, there's a growing recognition of indigenous ownership rights.
And it's a real leveling of the power dynamics. And it's also making sure that indigenous ownership is respected as much as any other ownership right under the law.
Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and the heirs of the late weaver Clarissa Rizal sued the luxury retailer last April. In addition to violating the copyright, they said Neiman Marcus violated the Indian Arts and Crafts Act by misrepresenting the code as an Alaska Native craft. Alaska-based attorneys for the defendants did not respond to requests for comment, but in Sea Alaska Heritage's statement, the nonprofit says the retailer and associated defendants asserted the design was public domain and truthfully advertised. they will not have to admit fault or wrongdoing under the settlement. Lily Hope was one of the plaintiffs and Clarissa Rizal's daughter. She says she's glad the dispute has been resolved. And Alaska is preparing for its first elections under a new system greenlit by voters last year. As Eric Stone reports from Alaska's Energy Desk, experts who have experience with the system Alaska is implementing have some advice for election administrators: educate and test.
The passage of Ballot Measure 2 made two big changes to the way Alaskans cast ballots in state and federal elections. First, it did away with party primary elections and replaced them with a single multi-party primary. The top four vote-getters in what some are calling the Tundra primary will advance to the general election in November. And that's where the other big change comes in: ranked choice voting. Voters in the state of Maine started using the system for federal elections back in 2018, and Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows says educating voters on the new system was critical. She recalls doing some pretty creative outreach to teach folks how the system worked.
I remember house parties that spring where we would bring different ice cream flavors and bring sample ballots for people to choose. Did they like the chocolate best, vanilla second best, strawberry third best? And then go forth and demonstrate how that tabulation works.
They'd count up everybody's first choice votes, and if more than half the voters listed chocolate as their first choice, that's it. That's the winner. End of election. But if no flavor got more than half of the first place votes, let's say chocolate and vanilla each got 40% and strawberry got 20%, they would go to a second round. Strawberry is in last place, so it's eliminated, and then it's a race between chocolate and vanilla. That means it's time to look at all the strawberry fans' second choices. So if people who voted for strawberry had to choose between chocolate and vanilla, which one would they prefer? To keep things simple, let's imagine that everyone who voted for strawberry listed chocolate as their second choice. All the votes for strawberry would move to chocolate in the second round, and chocolate would win that election with 60% of the vote. Bellows says outreach and education are important, but so is figuring out the best way to translate voters' preferences into votes.
Ballot design is very important. It's important that voters be able to understand what their choices are and how to mark their ballot.
Christopher Patton studies exactly that. He's a researcher with the Maryland-based nonprofit Center for Civic Design. I asked him what he thought of Alaska's first prototype ranked choice ballot. It lists candidates for each race with a grid next to it labeled first choice, second choice, and so on. There's also a space for write-in candidates.
Overall, this is a pretty good start on the ballot. I am really excited to see it.
He's a fan of the grid layout. Maine uses that same system.
And we've tested this with quite a few voters, and that this grid system, which you can see on our website, does seem to work the best. And so that is what we recommend.
He says he's glad to see clear instructions up at the top of the ballot, but he suggests a few minor wording changes to reduce how much voters have to read. Patton says it's great that there's also an illustration at the top of the ballot, but he suggests some changes there, too.
What I would suggest is that the illustration shows the hand actually marking on that grid that appears below, and that you show the correct way to do it, and you also show a couple incorrect ways to do it.
While there are some best practices his group recommends, he says there's no substitute for actually testing the ballot on everyday Alaskans in, say, a focus group. Alaska election officials declined interview requests for this story and did not respond to questions about how the state plans to test its ballots. The switch to ranked choice will likely have another effect: a longer wait for results in close races, possibly even longer than last year when Alaska was one of the last states to announce results. State officials warn that when one candidate receives less than 50% of the first choice vote, they won't run the second round of tabulation until 15 days after the election. They say that's to allow time to receive and verify absentee ballots. Patton and Maine Secretary of State Bellows say they both stand ready to answer any questions Alaska election officials have as they gear up for the state's first ranked choice election in November 2022. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Eric Stone in Ketchikan.
Officials at the Alaska Volcano Observatory have raised the alert level after a small explosion was recorded at a remote volcano. The Alaska Volcano Observatory says satellite and webcam views indicate low-level ash emissions from Mount Vaniaminoff volcano. The ash cloud didn't go above 10,000 feet, and ash is visible at the volcano. Mount Vaniaminoff is located nearly 500 miles southeast of Anchorage on the Alaska Peninsula. Officials say it's one of the most active volcanoes in the Aleutians and has erupted at least 14 times in the last 200 years. This is KTOO News.